We do this. We're good at this. And we make all of these. We don't make energy. We make you save it. We connect and power just about everything around you and make the most of our energy and resources. We're open. Humans of all sorts from all over, all passionate about doing what's right. We're here to be your digital partner for sustainability and efficiency.
Good day and a very warm welcome to all our viewers to our Tech Central TCS Plus podcast. My name is JDF Chiba, and today we have with us Clive Roberts in the studio with us. He is the CPG segment lead from Schneider Electric, and in particular for Anglophone Africa. So Clive, welcome to the studio. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Clive, the topic we're going to be talking today is going to be an industry overview from a technology partner's perspective. So I think as a starting point, maybe just to set some context, please share with us a little bit about your role in Schneider Electric and how that plays into the discussion we're having today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. So I'm responsible for what we call CPG, consumer packaged goods. What it means is that we look after the customers within the food and beverage sector, life sciences, as well as household and personal care. And all the customers that are manufacturers within the 24 countries that we deem as English-speaking Africa on the continent. That's around 1,800 of those manufacturers on the continent. Mm-hmm. And me and a team of other people within East, West, and Southern Africa, we help to put Schneider's value proposition to the customers and help solve their problems.
So in terms of the CPG segment, can you just elaborate a little bit more about what you do in that area, please?
So my role is more to, you know, understand the customer's needs by observing trends, their challenges. Also, show them, you know, what our value proposition is. And in that sense, it will generate some interest through discovery sessions. And therefore, with the right, from the customer's perspective, with the right person to be delegated for a specific pain point, we then allocate on our side some subject matter experts to further workshop the problems, and ultimately out of it gets some of the things that we can solve for them.
Okay, so, you know, we want to talk about the industry as a whole, but, you know, in the food and beverage industry, you know, how has this evolved over the last 5 years, and what are the trends that you are seeing?
So we're seeing customers mostly desiring to have a smart manufacturing facility and sustainable. Sustainable in a sense that, you know, reducing waste, being energy efficient. The second one is that customers or consumer preferences change over time. People want to know what they're consuming. Therefore, they want to see what's exactly in the packaging that has been produced. So we're seeing variety, you know, sugar-less type of dietary needs. Some of them, the vegan type of dietary. Mm-hmm. So it forces our customers to be able to formulate the produce that they make very quickly, and that requires resilience from a customer side. The other thing is cost management, or what people generally call cost leadership. You know, how do I yield the same output with less, in terms of less energy resources, less waste, and less ultimate resources at the end of the day? So those top three things we're seeing as a kind of an umbrella observation that we see in the industry.
Okay, so clearly, you know, we've come through this period of COVID, mm-hmm. And I'm sure there were many, many challenges that were faced by these manufacturers, you know. Mm-hmm. And how did they adapt their businesses to cope with these challenges?
Yeah, it was a shock for us after 2020. We ordinary people were forced to be at home, but we needed to eat, drink, and we needed to, you know, have vaccines and tablets, etc. Yes. So someone needed to man the actual factory. It then accelerated digital transformation in some of our customers by, you know, making sure that the connected level of the factory is highly automated and be able to integrate with ERP systems and so on for scheduling, etc. So since then, when we thought we ducked out of COVID, things were a little bit steady. My observation then was the load shedding as a result, water scarcity, especially in the Cape Side, the Eastern Cape Side of South Africa at the time. That then shifted focus to be more power resilient. So we saw a lot of people investing in power availability. With power availability comes power quality issues as well. And but our manufacturing customers managed to be resilient, and as a result, they could manage the onslaught of both COVID and power availability within South Africa.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you speak about digital transformation happening a lot faster, and I think that's been a fairly general yes. trend across the industry, and I think that's been one of the good things that's have come out of yes. COVID, right?
Right. Yes, and it helped customers to embrace innovation within the factories. No longer do you just have a machine running autonomously, but you have machinery now talking to one another, centrally communicating, storing data, and creating actionable insights for decision making.
So they're becoming a lot more intelligent, the systems. Yeah.
Absolutely. And with intelligence comes, what we call layer one automation. So if you look at an automation diagram, so at the bottom, you've got all the connected devices on site. To make them smart, you have to measure certain points within. Let's take a breaker, for example. You want to know how many times it has opened and closed. Mm-hmm. You want to know when to maintain it. You want to know how much energy went through that breaker to supply the distributed energy resources, etc. And to do that, you need more eyes and ears on that device, on the process, and so on, and then aggregate it. But once you aggregate it, you've got now tons of information that you need to filter through. And that's why through our intelligent historians and stacking of data, you can then extract data that is relevant to that particular person within the factory. And it comes on demand or as per a trigger. And it goes to you when you need to see the information. So that algorithm that decides that sits on top of the historian or the stack data. Mm-hmm. So that's why it makes it smarter and intelligent.
So you mentioned things like load shedding and that. So how have issues like load shedding, the water curtailment, and we're still experiencing that today, and the economic instability, how has that impacted your production and supply chains in the industry you're working in?
Correct. So if you look at, for example, industries that has pipes and liquids through them, dairies, breweries, etc. If you stop the line, there's a process called CIP that gets about. It means that you have to either dispose of the batch that's in the line, and then you have to clean it. So CIP stands for cleaning in place. Once that happens, nothing happens. You're just basically cleaning. You've got laborers working to clean the machine and so on. You don't produce.
You're losing
production. So once there's power dips or a power outage, it would cause severe catastrophic issues downstream. And we've helped customers with industrial UPSs, which we installed in line with the process machinery. And then once you have that dip, the industrial UPSs, which are modular, has the ability to take on that load to either switch off the process, complete it naturally, or to enable you to start up generators upstream and have continuity and so on. So through that, we've helped customers to be power ready, have power availability, and most importantly, to have the right quality of power in their system. Otherwise, if you have spikes going through, it's going to pop some of your controllers within the process.
Oh, so it creates damage to the equipment?
Correct, yes. Once there's a spike that goes through, it will blow cards and controllers and so on.
So by implications, these UPSs have actually almost ensured continuous production.
Correct, yeah. So bear in mind, these are industrial modular big UPSs, and it can hold that total demand, if it's designed and spec correctly, for a period of time until you switch it off or the process, or you actually start up an alternative power source upstream.
So, I mean, talking kind of sustainability, you know, what steps have the food and beverage manufacturers taken to reduce the energy footprint? We've just spoken a lot about UPSs and the like, and also to improve water efficiency amid these resource constraints.
So most of our big manufacturers are EU-headquartered, European Union-headquartered. And most of those countries have signed an accord with the UN on sustainability. So as such, they are environmental stewards. And to do that, I'm sure you've heard about scope 1, 2, 3 emissions. So what customers are doing, or what we are assisting them, is the most important thing is to start understanding what the requirements are for sustainability. In other words, what does it mean in scope 2, scope 1, and 3? Therefore, once you've identified that, you are able to work out a science-based targeted parameters or measures that you need to start working on. And some of it will reduce your operation, will impact your operations, and therefore you need to reduce them. We have helped customers by, you know, installing upstream, you know, distributed energy resources, meaning that you can connect your mains, solar PV, as well as generators and other alternative power sources into it, and have the capability to sync and choose the one that is less carbon emitting. In other words, if you use more alternative or renewable power, the lesser you rely on fossil fuel power generators like our like Eskom, for example. That's one part. The second part is, you know, as you run machinery in the factory, there's a thing that calls it's called power factor, and the power factor needs to be corrected to be cut to be in unity, more or less. Simple way to explain it, if you have a glass of beer, the foam in the glass of beer is not usable. The actual beer within the glass is usable. So therefore, the foam part is the reactive power, but you pay for the whole glass. Mm-hmm. So to make sure that we have power operating at unity is to reduce the foam. There we've got solutions that can reduce power factor correction solutions, and so on. That's one part. The other one is what we call harmonics. If you have non-linear loads from the process side and then it spikes through, that also creates, you know, inefficient machinery operations. So we've also have solutions that can buffer those harmonics and so on. And of course, the big one is to control the process variably. So in other words, if you need to pump 100 liters, just provide enough power to pump 100 liters. If you need to pump 78 liters, the demand goes down, your equipment just pushes out the required output. So as such, a combination of those would provide you with energy efficiency, resilience, and most importantly, environmental stewardship, because you're going to reduce your carbon footprint ultimately.
If you look at consumer trends, you know, how are the changing consumer preferences? You know, particularly, you mentioned things like organic, plant-based, functional foods, shaping the strategies of these manufacturers in Anglophone Africa.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Customers, well, this is they use production lines that are fixed, and they produce variations of things within the same line, right? Now, if you have to introduce a new formulation, the fixed infrastructure in terms of the processing line needs to be able to accommodate that. So there's a couple of ways. One is the, you know, having resilience around your batching and formulation system. There we've got model-driven MES, Manufacturing Execution System, which allows you to essentially check what formula needs to come through, in what quantities, to reorder some of the raw material and to be able to say if the line is available, can we use it? If not, what's the reason for not using it, et cetera, et cetera. Now, coming to the line, if you are running one formulation and then you have to change because of a certain preference, it requires high-level resilience in terms of your production facility and downstream your supply chain and so on. So it is very intense when you have to change that. Not only that, you have to also track and trace to see what went into the final product. And then you have to do barcoding, etc. So we have solutions through our Aviva solution set, which enables you to do reverse genealogy. So in other words, when you get the packaged goods at the end of the day, by simply scanning, you are able to track and trace and see where it went through in the process, which operator was operating at that time, and if there's something wrong, you can recall a particular batch with ease. So we've got solutions both on the software and the hardware layer that will enable these seamless integrations.
Well, that's quite smart, being able to track it all the way back to the manufacturing process.
Correct. So that ability exists. And you probably note that each and every beverage or a food package that you hold, there's a table of what's inside of
ingredients,
it.
Yes.
So it empowers the consumer to know what exactly they're consuming. And to do that, manufacturers have to go lab test and certify and be resilient from a process point of view.
I'm saying more and more people are starting to look at those labels today.
Right.
I know my family definitely does.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's touch a little bit on social media and e-commerce. What role has social media and e-commerce played in reshaping, you know, customer and consumer engagement and product distribution in the sector?
Well, from a trusted advisor's point of view, what we're seeing is that people want things fast and they want them now. You're probably aware of all the motorbikes that are running around lately when you order something. So the complexities there are you need to have your warehouse stacked with the product. You need to have your distribution channel on point to be able to get it to the consumer. So from social media, it enables individuals to be able to interact with their favorite manufacturer or wholesaler or distributor and be able to click on items that they require and to be able to order them. What it does then, it checks what's available and what has been dispatched, and then the reordering system is governed in that sense. So e-commerce is something that is very useful for us. Social media integrated e-commerce helps. Let's face it, we on our phones most of the time and mostly browsing through social media. So what our customers do, and which is smart, is being in that space to be able to constantly interact with a customer and to order from social media platforms through to their distributors or wholesalers and so on. So I think going forward, it will be the norm. But to have that resilience, you need to have information stored in the right place, in the right format, mm-hmm. for the right people. Mm-hmm. So that's then have one single version of the truth. So you need to have robust systems upstream before it gets to the customer.
Yeah, I mean, it's smart just thinking about, you know, in the past you operated largely in the manufacturing space.
Yes.
And not too much in the periphery distribution, well, some in the distribution right. Yes. Down to the consumer. All of that's being integrated into the intelligence today.
Absolutely. And then how do you stack information? If you have a lot of information, you need tools, you need algorithms to be able to help you. Machine learning and so on. So those are from a process side or a manufacturing side, end to end. All of those solutions, Schneider provides the hardware that connects to the shop floor as well as to the ERP layer and everything mm-hmm. in between. So for example, if you're sitting on the top layer as an executive and ask, show me how much production I've made on this line, those answers are now easily or readily available. You can ask, for one bottle, how much energy have I used? You can't ask such a question if your system is not tightly integrated. Mm-hmm. Therefore, that's where Schneider plays that role, not only in sustainability, also in efficiencies to help our customers to become more profitable.
Yeah, I mean, just from my perspective, thinking about it, you know, we've had these traditional manufacturing systems, the ERP systems, etc.
Yeah.
But Schneider has added this layer of intelligence around it and provided the glue effectively.
Correct.
To be able to pull all of this information together.
Not only that, you know, Schneider also is more agnostic, you know, in terms of hardware. So we have the ability to connect even to our competitors' equipment to pull data. Let's face it, at the end of the day, you need data to make decisions, but you need information in the right context and format so that you can click and see, right? And Schneider, I mean, all of these things, they operate on our platform called EcoStruxure. It's an IIoT-enabled platform. It scales with the needs of the plants, both shop floor and on top. And it's modular, so you can plug on what you need. It's like your cell phone. You've got the hardware of the cell phone, but if you want Facebook, you just download the app and it works with the phone. If Google Maps, it uses the gyroscope within your phone. It's not like you buy something separate. It just uses the embedded platform that it comes with. So through EcoStruxure, you know, Schneider enables that integration, but then it introduces something else, cybersecurity, you know, and that's one thing that is very, very important that we offer as well, to make sure that your tightly integrated system or manufacturing system is protected from intrusion and all the other things that could cause harm from a digital space point of view.
Okay, I want to change direction now, talk a little bit about, you know, the economic recovery and the growth, particularly after COVID. So what strategies have manufacturers employed to recover from economic setbacks that was caused by COVID-19 and some of the other challenges you've spoken about?
Yeah, what we're seeing, and I'm speaking from a trusted advisor, from an outsider, so to speak, what we see, there's more and more need to advance digital transformation. That helps, you know, to be more efficient, to be ready in terms of information. And most importantly, it helps you to predict certain scenarios or outcomes and so on. So we're seeing customers embracing, you know, the digital transformation era. And we're working with, especially in the pharmaceutical industries, with generating digital transformation plans for our customers. And that entails, you know, workshopping, audits, assessments, discussions, and so on. And then ultimately build a digital transformation plan. So since COVID, I think the appetite has been accelerated. People are more ready to hear what solutions are there. And another one that is upstream is, for example, we've got a solution called ETAP, which basically helps you draw single line diagrams. But the important part is it can simulate various electrical scenarios for sizing, discrimination in terms of power discrimination, trip settings, etc. And it creates a digital twin of the actual electrical infrastructure, or if it doesn't exist, you can design it offshore, so to speak. So by simulating all the scenarios on a digital twin enables you to have the right sizing, the right equipment to respond to the right needs and so on. So as such, customers embrace digital transformation with the intentions of automating at least the layer one or the bottom layer of your automation triangle. And most importantly, they harness the analytics that sits on layer three to be able to, you know, be able to have information in the right context for decision making. So we're seeing that in response to mostly from a COVID perspective. They want readiness. And they want to know quickly in the right way to the right person.
You know, I think digital transformation is an absolute given.
Yes.
And, you know, if companies are not pursuing that, they're going to fall behind quite clearly.
Absolutely.
You know, and just the fact that all of these new technologies have made so many things possible to run your business in a much more integrated way. So Absolutely. Clearly companies need to embrace this.
Yeah, and you need to have a platform that can scale.
Yes.
You know, for example, this table, if we're going to add two or more of you and I, we need to just plug it in and share the same infrastructure. Likewise, on a manufacturing facility, as you add more lines or add that, you know, that utilities at the back of the factory onto the system, you need to scale and connect that as well. And to scale, you have to have the same framework, you have to have the same standards that you just extrapolate in terms of data collections when it comes from, when it comes to, you know, the modeling of the plant and so on. The same graphic, if it's green, it means it's running. If it's red, it means it's stopped. The whole standard just extrapolated. So it enables you to design once and reuse as you expand in the factory. So it accelerates digital transformation and subsequent automation integration.
So manufacturers would typically have different manufacturing equipment from different suppliers, you know, and they need to bring them all together. What is available out there that allows them to integrate these various disparate platforms?
So there's an organization called Universal Automation Organization. It's a nonprofit company, and customers and suppliers can, you know, be part of that organization. In that, what they do is allow multi or various vendors to be able to access one another's data. So it allows for hardware agnostic integration. As such, a customer now has the benefit of not, you know, completely taking out one, you know, supplier's hardware and replacing it with another supplier's hardware. Instead, what it enables you to be able to scrape or use the data from a competitor in a way that you can orchestrate certain events and be able to intelligently control your process. So to accelerate digital transformation, Schneider Electric has what we call EcoStruxure for Automation Expert, which allows for you to model, especially on the controller layer, information that comes in from events on the control layer side, be able to control things like VSDs and so on, and then publish it on some of our industrial PCs for the operator to interact with. Mm-hmm. It is a low-cost automation drive, and it helps definitely with accelerating digital transformation, at least from a control layer point of view.
Changing direction now. So how is the government policy, you know, if you look at things like sugar tax and support for cooperative bakeries, influencing growth in the food and beverage industry?
Yeah, well, it's I'm speaking for, you know, especially our customers in the sugar industry. I mean, now, for example, now you have to have substitutes of sugar. I mean, sugar has different variations, you know, monosaccharides and so on. I'm not an expert on that. Mm-hmm. So how do you provide the same beverage or the same consumer goods that you have with an alternative? Somewhere you need to manipulate your formulation, you know, and then deploy it into the machine to exactly execute that. So it requires our customers to spend more money in innovating, maybe reorientate the machine in terms of its operations, and most importantly, to package it so that people can see that this is an alternative from that point of view. So from a government policy point of view, you know, I can't speak, but I suspect that it does cost our manufacturers dearly. Maybe thorough engagements with manufacturers as well as the consumer could help in terms of understanding what the preferences are. For example, there are zero alcohol beverages now. Mm-hmm. And some manufacturers has to manufacture it with the alcohol, but then extract the alcohol out of it later.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so you see, you use all the input costs to manufacture normal beverage, but then you have to remove it later to maintain the taste, you know? So it costs more on the manufacturer at the end of the day. So it's one debate that will never end, I suspect.
Yeah, I guess it adds to their cost. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, you know, I also wanted to ask the question about growth opportunities, right, and the fact that they've got these challenges that they're going to deal with. So how are these companies dealing with this?
So, for example, if I just make a practical example, if you take a manufacturer in East Africa, let's call it, let's say Tanzania, mm-hmm, it's not headquartered in the EU. For that person, what he wants is volumes as cheaply as possible so that they can get to the customer. So volumes is very important. But for EU-headquartered companies, volumes is important, but at the right quality equally, within the right governance framework. In other words, you don't want child labor and all of those things that are not good.
So there's
good
compliance there, yes.
Yeah. So this example of the EU-headquartered company, for example, you'll find that there's a premium in terms of the product that they charge for. And then there's alternatives which are a lot more cheaper and so on. So the opportunity is by having tracking and tracing and knowing where everything comes from, compliance and so on, it will make the companies that invest in traceability, tracking and tracing, high level of automation, quality sampling, etc., and comply more trustworthy than the other competitors or alternatives. And it will help within the case, for example, we've seen that some kids died in Soweto of eating things that are not, you know, so top and so on. Yeah. Manufacturers who made those, they kind of mimic mainstream manufacturers. If you have tracking and tracing, the ability to know where it comes from and so on, and consumer awareness, it will really help in the bigger scheme of things. But the innovation or the opportunity comes whereby if I can trust what I see and buy it, it will unlock a customer set within the continent that would want to
but
buy.
But is there always a premium for that other, for the better quality product, I could call it that?
Let's make an example with, there's a difference between the bread you buy with a very well-known shop that starts with a W, mm-hmm, and there's other shops that has also bread. You ask yourself, what's the difference? The difference is within the quality parameters, the safeguarding around of how this thing is manufactured and the environment and so on. When you see that product, you trust it, it's high quality, it's well preserved. On the other hand, the others, you know, it depends on you know your economic demographic as well. If you afford that, you know, you'll probably be comfortable to buy that. But there are people who have sensitive taste buds and they want high quality produce, and they will stick with those trusted brands, to, you know, going forward. So you remember the listeriosis issue and so on?
Correct, yes.
Everybody enjoyed that particular product until this happened and the brand, the trust went away as a result. So the question is, how did that enter the factory? Do we trust it going forward? And there's a lot of manufacturers who pay a lot of time and effort and attention and investment to make sure what the consumer ultimately consumes, mm-hmm, is of high quality and it can be trusted. So standing out with quality and with being trusted is a premium, but it is good for the conscience at the end of the day.
Absolutely. I mean, if you just look at the reputational damage these incidents have created, you know, and that directly leads to loss of revenue and loss of customers.
Correct. You know.
I guess, you know, probably my last question is, you know, balancing innovation with compliance. And, you know, I think you've touched on it. Maybe you want to elaborate a little bit, particularly with stringent regulations. And at the same time, they're going to maintain competitiveness.
Right. It's a tough one. I mean, some people might, you know, have different opinions. For you to comply on, for example, a set of rules or regulations, and to certify that, for example, ISO compliance, etc., it means you need to be able to prove that you followed a specific process in order to have a specific produce. Mm. And throughout that process, there needs to be certain things in place at the right time and so on. So it costs a lot of money. So that on its own is kind of expensive, just complying. You didn't produce, you're just complying. Now you have innovation to say, how about we do this instead of that? It will yield the following benefits. But you need to do it within the framework that was set by the people who regulate the industry in that sense. So innovation will never stop. I think it is good that we constantly innovate. The regulations is a matter of engagement and discussions and see which ones would yield maximum outcomes based on what you're producing. Over-stringent regulation can stifle, the actual produce or the thing that you manufacture. And therefore, it would maybe make customers divest their business from that particular geography where they are to other countries which are less stringent and so on. Mm-hmm. And then they would manufacture outside and sell to that country through distributors and so on. An example that comes to mind is Nigeria. Last year they went through the elections for the president and governors. The country was in a standstill for nearly 5-6 months because nothing could happen. And people are nervous what policies are going to come out of this new administration and so on. Inflation ran away, you're probably aware. Mm-hmm. And before that, some of our big customers divested out of the country. And Nigeria has close to 220 million people who need to eat, drink, and drown their sorrows. So what? At least 8 that I know of divested out of the country. You might say, well, it's 220 million, so it makes business sense to be there and manufacture there. But regulations and, policies at the end of the day could stifle business growth. So innovation by, perhaps, making certain formulas there and combining them somewhere else and bringing them could help. But at the end of the day, policies could stifle. So therefore, greater engagement is required.
Yeah, I guess, if you just think of this very broadly, regulation's necessary.
Yeah.
And it's when it becomes an overkill, then companies are going to start thinking twice about where they are. But I think in spite of regulation, there's enough technological advancement and innovation to still drive opportunity.
Yes. I mean, opportunity will always be there, It's just that at what rate, at what investment, and what makes sense, and so on. Is there fertile ground for that innovation and the investment and so on? So those are, I would imagine, what C-suite people constantly think about. And if some of them are not lining up, they probably would look at alternatives that are the best alternative. And some of it means moving out of the country or moving to another country which has less of those stringent, over-stringent policies and regulations.
I think before we close, are there any key messages you'd like to leave the audience with?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it is always good for customers to engage OEMs like us, Schneider, well in the beginning, because we have an opportunity with our experience within the industry to be able to advise on how to go forward, what to choose, what path to take, etc., etc. So constant engagement helps. Number two, sustainability is something that will always be on the table. It's measured through ESG on a board level. Companies are required to be able to be environmental stewards. So think sustainability from an operational point of view, production, et cetera, not as a standalone thing. We have consultants that can assist with that and be able to navigate customers in that sense. And lastly, we will be opening our innovation hub soon. We're certainly looking forward to customers to come and see and play with some of these technologies, as it will be showcased permanently on our shop floor for them to come in and just play around with the technology and it will be my privilege to host some of them.
Fantastic, Clive. It's been a fascinating conversation. I've learned a lot. I don't come out of your industry, so I've learned a tremendous amount today. I think great for manufacturers to participate in and listen to this conversation, but I think it's equally interesting for consumers.
Yes.
To understand the process, the way manufacturing is done, the challenges that they have, but also ultimately the quality conversation becomes an important one for the consumer. So, fascinating conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me.